Welcome to Environmental Voices. I'm your host, Marie Rock, and joining me today in the studio is Katie Zalanis. She's a botanist and invasive species coordinator for the Leech Lake DRM. That's quite a title.
Yep.
What do you do?
I do a couple of things. One is, like you said, the invasive species coordinator position. So I coordinate crews that are going out and controlling invasive species around the reservation and the Chippewa National Forest, and I want to talk about one of those today. And then another part of my job is surveying rare plants around the reservation and other work involving plant communities.
Really? Do we have a lot of rare plants out there?
We do have a lot of rare plants. Some of the ones I'm focusing on this spring coming up are orchids and some small rare ferns that we have. But we do have quite a few rare plant species.
All right. First, what makes a species invasive?
Yeah, that's a great question because there's some debate and sometimes some misunderstanding about that term. We actually have tens of thousands of non-native species that have been introduced to the United States, but only some of them become a problem for our native ecosystems or become costly or problematic to control. So plants or animals that cause ecological or economic harm, we typically say are invasive, whereas plants or animals that are non-native but considered beneficial or at least not harmful are generally not termed invasive. So for example, things like dandelions that are non-native but aren't invading our native ecosystems, we wouldn't call them invasive necessarily or consider them a major problem for control, but we have right now 27 plant species listed as invasive species that are priority targets of control in the Chippewa National Forest. So those are plants or animals that are invading our natural ecosystems and causing some sort of problem that we want to take care of. And one of the highest priority species is garlic mustard.
Sounds like a salad green.
Yes, it actually can be. And garlic mustard, it's a plant, and it did originally come from Europe and is thought to have been brought to North America by settlers in the 1800s. And they did use it as a culinary herb and for medicine. In its native range, people used garlic mustard for food and medicine for thousands of years. And it's still foraged for today, both in Europe and in the United States, although less so here. We often think of it as a problem, as an invasive, and so a lot of people don't know that it can be used for food, although people are picking up on that. One of the issues with using garlic mustard as food and foraging for it here is that, of course, we need to be really careful to avoid accidentally spreading it if we use it as a food and forage for it by composting it or accidentally spreading seeds.
Okay. Why is this species a concern?
There are some important things about garlic mustard. I can tell you a little bit about the plant first. It would understand a little bit better why it's a concern. It's an herbaceous flowering plant in the mustard family, which gives it that spicy, garlicky smell that gives it its name. And it's a biennial, so it takes 2 years to complete its life cycle. The first year it grows as a group of leaves from the base of the plant called a rosette. And the second year it bolts, flowering and developing thousands of seeds. So after the plant has flowered and disperse those seeds, the second year it dies. However, those hundreds or thousands of seeds are left in the seed bank for 5 to 8 years. So that's one of the reasons why this species can be a problem and can be difficult to control. Another reason why this species in particular is a concern here is that many invasive species thrive in areas that are already disturbed by humans. So like I mentioned before, dandelion, we might consider something like that an invasive species or a non-native species, but it typically thrives in places that are already disturbed. They're not invading our intact natural ecosystems. Garlic mustard, on the other hand, can invade healthy, intact hardwood forests, including our maple basswood forests. And when it does that, it can spread really rapidly, again, by those hundreds and thousands of seeds that it produces each year that stay in the seed bank and can keep sprouting. It can spread rapidly in dense stands of plants and outcompete our native understory plants, including culturally important species like wild ginger. And it even releases what we call allelopathic chemicals, which can harm neighboring plants and give it an additional edge in competition with other species. It can form extremely dense stands on the understory of our hardwood forests, and we don't see that yet in the places where we find it here, but in eastern forests, there are places where the entire understory of the forest has become garlic mustard. And of course, as I said, that can destroy habitat for our native plant species, but it can also impact habitat for insects like native pollinators and animals that depend on that understory plant wow. community as well. So yeah, it can be a real problem, and our crews are working really hard right now on the populations we do have on the reservation to make sure that it doesn't become a big problem.
Where are those at?
In this area, fortunately, garlic mustard is only found in a few areas on the reservation. Mostly on Onegin Peninsula. It's much more common and has been much more destructive in other parts of the country. In the places where it's invading our forests, it occurs as scattered groups of plants. But in other places, like I said, it can completely cover the understory of deciduous forests. Right now, we're managing populations cooperatively with the Forest Service. Again, like I said, in Onegin, mostly around the Stony Point campground. So these populations have been managed by DRM and the Forest Service cooperatively, like I said, for several years. And they haven't been eradicated yet, but they don't seem to be spreading, thanks to the control efforts that DRM has been conducting.
Does this plant grow near water, or is it just wherever?
That's a good question. It could grow near water. It's not an aquatic species, but it likes moist hardwood forests.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. How do you control that?
Garlic mustard can be difficult to control. Like we mentioned, it can have these crops of hundreds or thousands of seeds per plant every year that stay mm-hmm. in the seed bank. So one of the really important things, knowing that it's a biennial and it has a two-year life cycle, it's really important that we get to it before it flowers. And if anybody has it on their property, that's something that's really important to consider, that we want to pull this plant early enough in the year so mm-hmm. that it isn't able to go to seed. So one of the strategies is mechanical removal, meaning that we just physically pull the plant up from its roots and try to get those roots completely. It's most important to do that before it goes to seed. It can also be useful to go back in the fall. The plant has this two-year life cycle where it grows in, the plants that are 2 years old flower, but the plants that are 1 year old that are just growing from seeds this year, they'll become those little rosettes in the fall. So if we can get those rosettes in the fall, we can kind of do a double whammy on the population and do a better job of getting the population under control. So that method is what's traditionally been used at the sites where garlic mustard is found around the reservation. And it's kept the population from spreading, but like I said, it hasn't eradicated it. Another strategy that we really like to use for other invasive species is biological control.
Wow.
Where we take the natural enemies of an invasive plant, for example, an insect from its home range, and we reunite them with the host plant here so that there's more of a natural balance in our ecosystem with that plant, and that natural enemy can help us control it a lot more easily than having us hand pull each plant.
Oh, yeah.
Garlic mustard does have many natural enemies in its home range in Europe, but in order to use them here, they need to be tested extensively to ensure that the biological control, the insect, doesn't cause unintended harm to other plants or animals here. So we're waiting for a biological control agent to be approved for this species, and it sounds like it's coming, but it's not quite here yet. So for now, we're sticking with pulling it. The other option, of course, is spraying herbicide. That's really a last resort, and we haven't done that with this population yet at DRM. But one of the advantages of using a chemical control on this species is that garlic mustard can stay green, for example, early in the spring or later in the fall when our native plants are dormant. Mm-hmm. So there's some possibility of using that kind of control to work with garlic mustard without harming our native species. Although, like I said, we haven't done that yet. That's really a last resort for us.
Are those plants edible?
They are edible, yes. I have not eaten it myself, but when you crush it, I have garbage bags of it in our greenhouse, so I feel like I should try it sometime, but it is edible, and when you break the leaves, it does have sort of a garlicky, oniony smell. I've seen recipes where you can use it simply as a green, probably mm-hmm. in any recipe that you could use as a green. I've seen pesto recipes that I think look kind of interesting, and
wow.
I've seen people use it in omelets and things like that. like that. So yeah, eating it is definitely a possibility, and it seems to me like kind of an attractive way to maybe control those populations and make some use of them instead of just simply eradicating them and getting rid of the plant. But on the other hand, like I said, we need to be really careful if we do choose to go out and forage that plant that we're not accidentally spreading some seeds or spreading roots in compost.
Right. Actually, what I was thinking is, I know down in the cities, if they have a lot of weeds or grass or something out of control, they bring in goats to eat. I was wondering, you know, wouldn't that kind of be a natural kind of thing to do? Because sometimes don't bugs turn into an invasive species themselves if we bring them in to eradicate something that's like a plant, and then they turn into a problem?
That's a great point. And like I said, that's why they do, when we consider using these biological control agents, there's extensive testing done on them. So for example, these insects that we're considering using for garlic mustard, they have been in testing, I think, for over 10 years now, and they're still not releasing it yet. So that's absolutely a concern and a great point. I think I find the possibility of using goats really intriguing. We haven't gone there yet with GRM, but maybe that's something for us to think about in the future.
Oh, definitely, definitely. What other species do you guys have going on and you control?
Yeah, we have a number of other invasive species that we work with throughout the reservation. Some examples of the major ones that we work with are tansy, wild parsnip, which can actually has the juice of the plant, if it gets on your skin, can cause your skin to become very reactive to the sun and cause sunburns. So it's actually a public health problem. Invasive pea shrubs, spotted knapweed is a problem. Purple loosestrife is an aquatic plant that we work with, and that one actually has a biological control agent that we can use. And buckthorn is a shrub or small tree that is becoming a problem in some of our the understory of our forests. So those are some of the major ones that we work with, and we really try to prioritize controlling populations that have the most impact on humans and natural ecosystems around Leech Lake.
Wow, all that is so interesting. Where can we go to learn more about invasive species here on the reservation?
A great place to go is the DRM website and find the Fish, Wildlife, and Plant tab on the left-hand side of our page. From there, you can visit our invasive species pages, which have information on both terrestrial and aquatic invasives, including photos, species information, and where they're found across the reservation and surrounding areas.
Okay. If we find an invasive species, let's say I go out in my yard and, oh my gosh, look at that. What is that? What do I do?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you find a population or even individual invasive species, or you think you might have and you're not sure, it should be reported to the DRM Plants Program. You can call 218-335-7442 or even stop into our office, which is located on 371 just south of Cass Lake. It's really helpful if you think you've found an invasive species to include the location. So if you can, especially if you can provide coordinates from your phone or GPS, in addition to a description, or photos are can also be extremely helpful. That can help us find the exact location and identify what the potential invasive species might be.
So I was thinking just yanking it out of the ground and bringing it to you.
That's a possibility. You know, if you really think it's an invasive, that's a good idea. But if it's also potentially a native, maybe you don't want to yank it out of the ground. But that's not, yeah, if you want to bring up, if there's a big population of something that you think is an invasive, then by all means, taking a sample and bringing it in might help to identify it.
Excellent. Katie, this has been so informative, and it's been awesome having you here to talk about this stuff. I'm sure there's lots more that we can talk about, but
absolutely.
I want to thank you for coming on in. Hey, that's going to wrap up this edition of Environmental Voices. For KOJB 90.1 The Eagle, I'm Marie Rock.